You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and normally with me is my co-host, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox. Unfortunately, she's a little under the weather this morning, got a little bit of a sore throat, felt it would be better to save that throat and get it healed up, but she will be with us next week. And remember, each week we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. We're going to do what we can to help you have the happiest life you can. And with us having so much experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And we will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Today, we're going to be talking about the point of power, and that is where realization meets quantum physics. Our guest today, Peter Baxter, author of The Point of Power. Peter has pursued academic excellence, receiving several advanced degrees from the University of Illinois, followed by postgraduate research as a visiting professor and lecturer. Peter works with many charities, is a professional speaker, author, musician, and artist. He has recently been featured on Breakthrough with Tony Robbins, which is carried by the Huffington Post. His first book, The Point of Power, has been very well received by the media and readers nationwide. And I can tell you that it's also been well received by myself as well as from Melody. And again, she couldn't be here, but she sent me some texts saying to please make sure and tell him that she has not only enjoyed the book herself, but that she has already referred it to many of her clients. Peter, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Great. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I've got to tell you, I'm about three quarters of the way through the book, and not only do I like what it has to say, but I like the way that you have structured it. And that was one of the things that caught me right away, because, you know, not only did we have a chance to read a little bit about you, the author, but then we were also able to then go into the theory and go into the science and then go into the application. And then for those people, the way that I looked at it was for those people that go, you know what, I get the theory. You know what, I don't need that. I'm a little bit unsure about the science. They can go right to the science. And again, for those people that are a little more scientific and they go, look, I understand the science, but I'm a little iffy on theory, they can go to that part. Or for some, if they think they know both, they can go right to application and start using it right away. So what was it that kind of made you think, you know what, I'm going to structure it this way so that everybody can get it? Or what was your thought process?
Well, I wanted the book to be readable and accessible to the layman. The concepts in quantum physics, even quantum, people that study quantum physics, professors Stephen Hawking, Brian Penniman, and the true greats in this field will admit that, you know, we're actually pretty clueless even where we're at this time. We still think the world is flat in some ways, and so there's a lot of argument, dissension, and debate on the concept of who God is, how the universe functions, and most importantly, what I look at in my book is the point of power is, How do we interact with the universe, and how do we create our lives?
Now, what was your level of research to put this book together?
Well, I spent 10 years doing a literary review. I looked into ancient texts going back 2,500 years, starting with Lao Tzu and the Tao Te Ching. He was the founder of Taoism, and brought it all the way forward, and there wasn't anything that I didn't uncover. And I looked for common denominators. I looked for things where it was a non-judgmental, research-oriented academic paper is how it started out. And I didn't want to it didn't include my own opinions. It's purely research-oriented. So I was looking for just merely principles. So at the end of the project, of that aspect of the project, I ended up with a spreadsheet of essentially universal truths or rituals or concepts that all of the texts remained as common denominators. If they weren't a common denominator, I removed them from the list. I then went over to the most contemporary view of the universe and God. I kind of use the same word oftentimes, and I don't do that to be insensitive to people that are very religious, but the way God functions is the way the universe functions, and I looked at essentially how those things worked within the views of modern contemporary quantum physics, because that is our that is our language for describing how God works, whether you agree with that or not. We're looking for finite sort of scientific conclusions in order to explain the way it works. That's what Stephen Hawking has been doing. That's what Brian Fenneman was doing, and Max Planck started back in early 1900s. Albert Einstein, all these guys were looking at how does the universe work, and they were looking for essentially principles and laws that they could rely on to develop essentially mathematical models to describe what was going on. I took the two areas and I essentially wove a fabric. I looked for common denominators that the physicists agreed upon, and they were, you know, we'll call them contemporary truths. And I looked at, and I should go so far as to say, in quantum physics, in the quantum area, there all we have is conditional truths. We don't have actual truths. That's why there's the debate goes on. We can't really prove who God is, how God works, or how the universe works. And I go into a lot of detail in the book on why that's true. Even going to look at the way a particle or an atom functions and works, we can, just by observing the quantum transaction, we actually alter it. And that's what makes it very difficult to track. And I say that very simply, but it's a very complex question. And so what I look to do is essentially look at it as an academic paper, bringing these two areas together and saying, well, what are they all saying is true? After I got through cross-referencing each of the points, I looked at what I saw as a real clear truth underlying all this. They were all pointing to the same things. And I had a lot of fun. I was in Beijing recently at the Lama Temple, and I was interviewing young and older Tibetan monks. And again, bringing them into the fabric and saying, well, how do your daily rituals align themselves with what Lao Tzu had to say, or what Jesus Christ had to say, or what the Torah or the Quran had to say? And again, there was no argument. When you simply looked at the common denominators and began to focus merely on that which has been around for 2,500 years, these things were as true as what we are seeing in quantum physics, and furthermore in the research that's going on in terms of the brain and how it functions. I looked at a lot of research by a gentleman named Richard Davidson, University of Wisconsin, who's been mm-hmm. measuring brain waves for 30 years, and it's very clear. This is no longer a question. The frequency of our brain wave essentially manifests itself in our consciousness. The lower the frequency, the lower the level of consciousness. And the lower the level of consciousness, if you can imagine how that impacts on your life in the natural. In other words, if you're a victim mentality, you're blaming, everybody knows, you probably know somebody that is always blaming mm-hmm. someone else for their point in life, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, if you look at that person, that represents their consciousness. It's the way that they look at the universe, the way they look at their lives. It's the way they see themselves. So if you can imagine that person going out into society, and no matter what job they get, no matter what relationship they get into, no matter what situation, their consciousness leads them to the same place every single time. I got, you know, messed over again. That my boss is this and that and the other thing. My girlfriend or my boyfriend is to blame for this, and I just wish they would change. And if they would change, then I would be happy. I mean, have you seen that loop?
Oh, yeah, and so many times they're not willing to just look at themselves and not be as focused on the other person or their change, but just focusing on themselves and going, what is it that I can do to further this myself, and work looking at the forward part, not looking back as to whatever they did that blamed them. So
But you can imagine how that plays itself out. I mean, you could just put yourself, forget quantum physics, just put yourself in that person's life for a moment, put yourself in a romantic relationship, and just think of how many times that you've been in a situation with a spouse, I don't know whether you're a parent, but if you have a child, or you've been in a situation with a legal conflict, where instead of looking for opportunities to resolve, you're looking for opportunities to blame.
Right.
Can you imagine how that plays itself out?
Well, yeah, and you mentioned in legal situations, I think that's how it continues to fuel the fire. If neither party is looking for a way to make this work, and both are looking for a way to fuel the flame or to blame, well, of course, it just continues to go on and on and on.
Right. I mean, it's funny because I was looking at your website before you called, and I noticed that this is the show supposed to be, it's supposed to be comical, and I thought, oh gosh, I got to talk about the universe, quantum physics, and be funny. And I actually was thinking about it. I thought, it is kind of funny if you take it back. In fact, it reminds me of the story that I talk about. It's called The Laughing Buddha. And it's sort of something that I came up with when I was in Beijing, China. But if you think about how fortunate we are, really, like if you just stop and forget about, come from a different perspective or come to your day with a different perspective and just look back, let's say 100 years even, just one century, go back 100 years and think about, the idea of being able to just, call somebody.
Oh, yeah.
100 years. When I was a kid, we had rotary phones, right? You'd spin a dial, and you'd make sparks, and you'd have to stand right next to the phone in your kitchen to make the call. Some of us had really long cords, but now it's funny because, you get angry because someone had too many zeros. You'd have to,
Yeah.
So, I mean, you get frustrated even in that. And now something takes 30 seconds to get out to space and back, and we're getting ridiculously upset over that. I mean, I don't, do you have an iPhone?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've got the iPhone, and you're right.
Getting frustrated?
Yeah, we get frustrated now for a dropped call. It's, oh my God, I've got a dropped call. I don't want this service anymore. I'm going to switch to another one.
Right.
In fact, I was
on the airplane the other day, and I was next day. I was on American Airlines, and God bless them, they've got internet. I'm on the computer all the time to write articles. I write for the Huffington Post, and constantly having to, get on the internet. And this guy is sitting next to me, and the internet comes on, and he goes, "You guys can open your laptops and use the internet. You're 3,000-4,000 feet in the air, and you're able to get online." I feel so lucky. It's amazing. And so the internet went on, and we're all working, and the guy next to me had his computer out. And it was funny because we went through a little bit of, rough air, and the internet went out. And I was like, okay, well, good thing lasted, and it's over. But I'd only known about it for 10 minutes prior, and the gentleman right next to me got so upset. He was just swearing up and down. He was like, this is just... going on and on about it, and it was just funny at how, and it's just to bring this full circle. I mean, really, it is not the circumstances that create our happiness or unhappiness. It's really the way that we look at a situation, and that's what I really I point to in the book. We have so much control over our existence, but we begin to really believe. In our ego, we begin to listen to our ego. Our ego becomes more. The more successful, the more the easier our lives get. The more luxuries we retain, the more dense our ego becomes. The more difficult it is to not react to life situations that way. But if you really think about it, and you go back, gosh, what was it like 100 years ago, where we didn't even have air conditioning, let alone a mobile phone? I mean, our lives are amazing. Even if you're going through rough times, whether it be financially or in a romantic situation, if you really begin to look at how amazing our lives are, we can get in a car, you can make it to New York to California in 5 hours, right?
Yep.
It wasn't 150 years ago, you'd be in a stagecoach for 6 months and half the people would die on the way. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So the Laughing Buddha... when I was in the Lama Temple, I was talking, I was sitting next to the Laughing Buddha. He was this 9 foot big, you know, you're supposed to rub his belly for good luck, and he's got this Coleco bag full of stuff for kids. And the Laughing Buddha, the concept, and it was the first time I really understood it, the Laughing Buddha wants us to experience life. And if we begin to just, you know, real quick lesson in what the Point of Power has to say, real quick lesson. When you're in a life situation, okay, before we're in the natural, before we're in, you know, we're in body, essentially, and we're having these experiences, we're in spirit. We don't have any senses. When we're in the natural and we're having life experiences, we're here to experience life. We're here to feel, and anything that doesn't necessarily feel so good is essentially a life, you know, we're going to label that as bad. I suggest relabeling that situation, no matter what it is, whether it's financial or romantic or physical, you know, and I know a lot of people are going to have a problem with this, but I'm going to tell you, if you begin to relabel those situations as contrasting situations versus bad, what you do is there's a consciousness shift immediately from something that is static, stuck, and you're resisting what's in the now, what's in the moment, to one that could potentially be dynamic. And the difference being just simply by relabeling it. If it's a contrasting situation, you're struggling with a parenting issue, you're struggling with a financial issue, you're struggling with a legal issue, you're struggling with a physical malaise that you've got, that's got in your head and spinning. If you begin to just simply relabel it as a contrasting situation, gosh, this is going to make me feel, I don't like the way this feels. And you begin to realign your behaviors, your thinking, and your desires with yet a new objective, which is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to flow from one life experience to another life experience. We're not supposed to get stuck. I mean, I don't know. Have you ever been in a relationship that was, you know, not necessarily a good one, and you were in it for, you know, for way longer than you should have, and you didn't figure it out until after you were out of it?
Absolutely. And with what you're saying right now, this is exactly why this is a perfect topic for this show, because this is the type of thing, and one of my sons teases me because, you know, he'll say something like, I went down to the surf thing and stuff, and then, you know, these people, you know, got in my way. You know, I hate when that happens. You know, and I'll go, so what you mean is that, you know, you don't like that as well as when the other things are happening. And he goes, oh, there you are, Dad, always trying to put a positive spin on everything and stuff. But you're right. These are the type of messages.
Not the right idea, though. No, that's fantastic. But you're bringing that kind of awareness and wisdom to your children already.
Right, which is what you're doing, which is why I'm saying this is why this is such a perfect topic, because that's the generation that we need to make sure gets this and passes it on.
Well, I'm really happy myself to finally get a half a clue, okay? So it's the most selfish thing you can do. The minute you begin to pivot your consciousness and instead of looking at a situation and labeling it as bad, the minute you change that, you find that situations that don't necessarily feel good, relationships that don't feel good, business situations, employment situations that are bad, instead of sitting there and complaining and pointing a finger and blaming and complaining and grinding your teeth and having anxiety over it, what you begin to do is you begin to look at it as a temporary situation. You know, whether it lasts another 6 months or another 6 minutes, you are automatically realigning your behaviors. What can I do to realign my behaviors with yet another objective? How can I realign my thinking and my behaviors? And so if you're in a situation where, a lot of us are struggling in these economic times where some of the people are losing their homes.
Sure.
It could be, if you look at it face value, yeah, someone's taking away your home, okay, and that's hard to make into a positive feeling, but address that, look at it, accept that feeling, accept that situation for what exactly it is, maybe review a little bit about how you got there, you know, don't be afraid to be introspective, but more importantly, begin to realign yourself with where you want to be in 2 weeks, in two months, and in 2 years. Where do you want to go? And rather than sitting and complaining and blaming and struggling, I believe you'll be the proof. If you do this, you will begin to see your life evolve, and it will become a dynamic situation. You will not be stuck. Because if you can imagine having a positive mental attitude when you're down, when you're in a situation like that, and instead of complaining and being negative, you go, okay, well, so what can I do about this? You know, so maybe it means going out and interviewing for jobs. Maybe it means going out and starting your own company. Maybe it means going out and revisiting how you want to live the rest of your life. It could be the most positive situation that ever could have happened, because before you were stuck maybe in a situation that you weren't happy, and you were going, well, gosh, I need to make my mortgage payment every day, and so that's why I do this crappy job. So I'm just by changing the way that you look at a situation, you can make lemons into lemonade quite often. Right. There's one story that I want to share. A good friend of mine, I talked to him about the Laughing Buddha story, and he went to his father became ill on Mother's Day. His name is Zach Mills. In fact, he sent me an email and a posted to my Huffington Post when I wrote about the Laughing Buddha. And he said, "You know, it's interesting your story that you told me the other day," because he was kind of helping with me with radio interviews. And I mentioned this Laughing Buddha story. And he says, "Well, I went to see my father, and he's a medical doctor, and he's not used to being the sick guy, and he's not a very, you know, you've heard most of the time doctors aren't very good patients." Well, he's a terrible patient, but more importantly, he just felt real bad. He's got 9 kids, and his wife's at home, and people are coming to visit him in the hospital on Mother's Day, and he's like, well, this is just awful. I feel so guilty for robbing Mom of her Mother's Day, and this is just horrible. Not only am I sick and I feel awful, but I just feel awful as the father of this family. And Zach said to him, he said, Dad, you know, my friend Peter just wrote this article for Huffington Post. And it was called The Laughing Buddha. It was about the Laughing Buddha. And he talked about the concept that, you know, how many times have we spent Halloween, Christmas, birthdays? You've got 9 kids. You've been at every single birthday. You've been at every single graduation ceremony. You've been there 100% of the time. And this is one time where you're not going to be there for us. You know, you're not going to be there on Mother's Day because you're sick or, you know, you're ill today. You're going to be better in next week, and you're going to be fine. But just think about how many times you have been there and how we're going to actually appreciate you much more by missing you today, number one. And then number two, what about in the future? How much more are we going to appreciate your company and really value you because we're able to miss you today? And he said that made his father feel a lot better about the whole situation. And again, I go to the point that if we change the way that we look at a situation, you change the reality of it.
Well, Peter, and I agree, and what you're talking about now are the actions that are being taken over and above just the positive thinking. And because I've been reading your book the last week, and one of the places I read it at is at the gym. So as I'm reading it, one of the other people that I know at the gym comes up, they look at what I'm reading, and they go, tell me about that. And I started to tell them a little bit about it, and so I'm explaining, you know, that it has to do with the point of power, you know, and it's sort of where, you know, self-realization meets quantum physics. And then their eyes glassed over, and they said, so they said, so in other words, it's just a positive thinking book. And I said, no, not exactly. I said, but you know what? I said, why don't you, if you listen to the show, I'm going to have the author on. And I said, I think he explains it much better than I can. And I like the point that you're bringing up is that it's more than just thinking about it. It's the actions that you take that really cement it in. Would you agree with that?
No, in fact, I quote, this is a Chinese proverb. It's if you think you know and you do not know. I mean, I think a lot of the positive mental attitude, positive self-speak, The Secret, a lot of these books, I've part of the 10-year literary reviews, I read everything there was on the subject all the way through to Tony Robbins, who I did do a program with recently in partnership with AOL, Huffington Post, and Tony Robbins' organization. They chose an article that I'd written. And a lot of these perspectives bring a very superficial tone to the subject matter. And I'm going to tell you, after 10 years and being an academic and a visiting professor, I really went to the heart of the matter, and I tried to look at not only why a lot of this New Age thinking works, because a lot of what they're talking about does function, but what happens is people go in and they think it's just about thinking positive thoughts or speaking in a positive way or dressing the right way or looking the right way. And I can tell you, none of that stuff works. Even prayer or chanting, if you're doing it the wrong way, it doesn't work. And I say the wrong way, it's really important. And this, again, I don't want to be insensitive to people that take the Bible literally, but you know, the real God, the universe, the principles and laws that basically are in place, whether humans are alive or dead, it doesn't listen to our language. It doesn't listen to our words. If you think about talking about something as complex as the universe, and if you believe in a God, if you want to describe who God is and you want to just use words and you're blowing air through vocal cords and you're using consonants, vowels to talk about something that is so amazing that it creates worlds from nothingness. It created, you know, if you look at your hand, that was created by these laws and principles / God. Right? It's really kind of funny to think that we can actually, with our handwriting, by typing on a computer that has a finite number of letters and combinations, that we can actually explain something like that. I think that in and of itself is funny. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't look at it, because I think it's fascinating, and I really think that the most efficient way to living your life while on this earth is to be connected, to find your point of power. And you haven't asked, but the point of power is where you silence your mind, you quiet your mind, you're no longer thinking about the future, you're no longer thinking about the past, and you're in the moment. And that is when you get connected. That's when you're connected, and that's where you can ask questions and get answers. That's what, you know, 2,500 years of ancient theological texts pointed to exactly the same thing. In modern quantum theory, when we look at the way the brain works and we look at what happens when you refine a brainwave, when a person does a meditation and they go into gamma state, it changes the way that they're able to interact with the universe. It changes the way that their life looks. It makes them healthier. There's all kinds of research out there that isn't in question. When you look at Richard Davidson's research measuring brain waves and correlating it to consciousness, or Dawkins' research, this stuff is proven. This is factual. So when we change the way that we think about something, I'm not talking about positive mental attitude or some kind of, you know, goofy stuff that is superficial. I'm talking about changing your actual brain wave. And when I was interviewing the Tibetan monks in Beijing the other day, it became clear to me that their daily ritual was 100% directed at training their brain to think in a certain way. And those secrets have been around for a long time. These are not new things. I think that as a society, we believe so much in who we are, in ego, that we are our bodies, that we are our college degree, that we are what we do for a living, that it's hard for us to go outside and think outside of that box. I don't know if you can relate to that.
Well, yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, when you're saying as far as sort of to quiet your brain, I mean, are we talking about meditation?
Right. That's when I talked about the rich, you know, some of the principles and laws and things that ancient texts kept restating. I wasn't looking for, they're all written in different languages. You know, so what I'm looking at is common denominators that all point to the same thing. If you look at you know, the Quran or Buddhism, which is not really a religion, it's a philosophy, but and you look at prayer, you look at the concept of meditation, you look at the concept of chanting, all three of those things are mentioned in almost every religion in some form or another, certainly they use a different word for it in a different language, but they're all talking about the same thing, and it's the same thing that Richard Davidson is talking about at the University of Wisconsin, where as you meditate, when you hook up a monk's brain to an electroencephalograph and you measure his brainwave, okay, it has a frequency, and that frequency is directly in correlation with the consciousness of that individual. Why is the Dalai Lama's brainwave such that it is because he meditates. He's been training and refining his brain to think in a certain way, to create a specific type of brainwave, and that brainwave is the way that we communicate with the universe. And I go so far as to suggest there are other theories in quantum physics that provide basis or foundation for what I'm talking about. There's something called a zero-point field. Again, these are not my ideas. These are the most contemporary theories that describe the way God, the universe, works. And so when you begin to pray or you begin to meditate, you're placing yourself into, you're participating in the zero-point field. There's another concept called entanglement. That's another quantum physics term that basically talks about how we're all connected. Now, again, this is these sorts of precepts are being restated by quantum physics. They're being restated because, you know, Buddhism has talked about the concept that we're all connected forever. And so I'm taking these concepts that have been out there for a long time and restating them in from a modern scientific perspective. And of course, I'm getting a lot of, if you go to my Huffington Post articles, whenever I go near physics or quantum physics and I use the word God or universe, of course, there's a lot of physicists out there that struggle with what I'm talking about because I'm definitely pushing the limits.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, I mean, it sounds to me like, so when we're in this meditative state, are we then putting ourselves in a better position to use our own natural intuition?
Well, you just hit the nail right on the head. I mean, that's exactly correct. The answers and the wisdom the database of wisdom that we gain access to is infinite. It's an amazing place to go, and it is where we become connected to zero point field. Okay, and whatever other information there is out there, that's how we gain access to it. And we do that through, in the book I talk about different types of meditations that you can do. And in the beginning, I mean, I've been doing case study after case study with people who struggle with just quieting their mind even for a moment. So this is not necessarily easy, but the harder it is for you to quiet your mind, the harder it is for you to connect with this sort of infinite resource. You're going to see it in your life. If you look at the person's life who's having a difficult time quieting their mind, you're going to see a person whose life mirrors that. It's not typically a pretty thing. They're typically prone for specific diseases. I've seen they'd have a difficulty in relationships. There's direct correlation between the way their life in the natural is and the way that their mind and their brain is unable to quiet itself. If you look at the cover of my book, it's a droplet of water,
mm-hmm.
and it's hitting another body of water. And the reason for using that particular animation or illustration is that it represents a thought. If you are having a thought and your thought is in the past, think of the raindrop before it's hitting the water. Before the raindrop is hitting the water, it has no impact whatsoever, as having no effect whatsoever. It is displacing no wave at all. It has no impact, just like a thought in the past. If you're thinking about, look what happened to me, oh, woe is me, look what happened to me, I can't trust this person because, you know, I have this knowledge base and I know that this is true. I don't, you know, and your thoughts are in the past, you're not really connected, you're spinning your wheels.
Right.
If your thought is in the future, if you're projecting into the future, you know, I wish I had money. I wish I was in love. Gosh, I hope that someday I win the lottery. And you're having those thoughts, and again, some of that could be, you know, align itself with some of the new positive mental attitude, new age thinking, where it's, oh, just be really positive, be really positive. Well, a lot of people, I think, try to be really positive, and they get really discouraged because it just doesn't work. If you're thinking, gosh, I hope I win the lottery, I wish I would win the lottery, what you're telling the universe is, I want to win the lottery in the future.
Right.
And the universe gives you that back. It says, okay, here, you're going to win the lottery in the future, not now. And so you don't win the lottery, and certain things don't happen. And it's a very simplistic explanation. But when the droplet hits the water, it displaces. It has no other opportunity. It has to displace a wave. And our thoughts, in a similar fashion, when it is the quality of our consciousness at the moment of contact with any given situation in the now, in the moment. When you're working out and you're lifting weights or you're running, what am I supposed to be doing right now? What's the appropriate action? What's the appropriate thought? Where do you want your consciousness to be the most amazing athlete that you can possibly be?
Right.
You heard of the term choking?
Yep.
Right? Athletics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a big athlete. I was a high jumper, pole vaulter, and I used to choke every once in a while. And the reason I would choke was because my mind was not in the present. My mind was thinking about how high the bar is. I'll never forget the first time I jumped over my own height, And you know, I'm 6'4", and the bar was at 6'6", and all I could think about is, oh my God, it's taller than I am. And of course, I knocked it down. And until I got past that thought that it's just really another 2 inches, and it's all physics, it's all, you know, it's all mathematics. I can clear that. But it was only after I changed my thinking and got clear on my objectives that I was able to clear that height. And in any given situation, when you're working out, when you're working with your children on a situation, if you can imagine, and as a parent, maybe you can relate to the idea of parenting, quality parenting, where you're actually, you know, instead of just talking at your children, talking at a person, you're talking to them.
Right.
Maybe you're reaching out. Maybe you've lowered yourself to their level. Maybe you're looking them right in the eye. You've got eye contact. You're in the moment. You're present, and you're touching them. You know? Can you relate to what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's the quality of the consciousness. It's not just parenting your child. It's not just, you know, when you're lifting the weight. It's about the way that you do it. It's about the quality of your consciousness that you bring to each and every transaction. And so the point of power talks about specifically, first of all, how do you get into the point of power? Because that is, it's no different than exercising your biceps. It's training your brain to quiet itself so that you can respond to what's happening in the moment. When you're talking to your child and you're looking at them in the eyes, and you're listening, and you're not just talking, you're listening. There's an exchange. You're feeling their energy. The quality of that interchange, tell me if I'm wrong, but the quality of that interchange is going to be 10 times, 100 times more effective than when you're trying to do something. When you're working on the car, or you're washing the dishes, and you're talking, and the child is behind your back.
Well, and you're absolutely right, and it is that way in any relationship that we have, and be it in your romantic relationship, your relationship with your children, it can be in your sales relationships with your clients all across the board. I couldn't agree more, and in fact, I'm going to take a break, but what I want you to talk about when we come back is to explain a little bit more about what you mean by intend, declare, and detach. And so let's walk everybody through sort of those phases on what it takes to go ahead and, you know, where you're going in with a particular desire and you want a particular thing to manifest for you. So we're going to be right back. We are talking with Peter Baxa, and the book is The Point of Power. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We're talking about the point of power, where self-realization meets quantum physics. Peter, now share with us a little bit about what your meaning is when you're talking about intend, declare, and detach.
What I tried to do with those three words is boil this down to something very basic and simple, so folks that read the book can walk away with a clear directive on how to manifest exactly what they want, rather than manifesting something that they don't want or something like what they want. So the first thing you have to do when you're having an interchange, and again, we're talking about a concept that's been around for a long time. It's been called prayer. It's been called meditation. It's been called chanting. In this case, we're just going to cut right to the chase. We're going to call this intention. You're going to intend. How many times do you get up in the morning and you go about your day and you don't really have a clear intention.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have a day like that where you just kind of go in through the paces?
Oh, sure. You have that, you know, that Sunday morning that you just don't want to be bothered with anything. So, you know, it's just a matter of, okay, I'm just going to get up when I get up and kind of let the day flow. But I think for most of us, I don't know that we have that very often.
Right. Well, you hope not. But, I mean, a lot of us, instead of setting a clear intention, what we do is we just get up and we go about our way. We get into traffic. We get mad at the way traffic is going. We get mad at the weather. We get mad at our manager when we get there because we're a little bit late and he yells at us. We get caught up in the day-to-day activities. And, you know, especially if you're living in today's world and you're suffering from the economic changes that are going on, maybe you've got a large family, maybe half of you is concerned about what's going to happen next week, let alone today, it allows us to really fall very easily into not setting intentions. And I relate that in the book to a ship without a captain, where you're just going right through the sea. And I took a yacht all the way up to Manhattan Harbor from Florida. And, you know, you're coming in and out of harbors. And if you can imagine running a boat like that and just, you know, going down into the galley, making yourself a drink and seeing what happens, you're going to hit something. You're not going to get where you wanted to go. And so the point being is you need to set a clear intention. You've got to let the universe know exactly what you want. And so very quickly, I'm going to talk about how you do that. When you set an intention, you've got to be crisp and clear. In other words, let's say your intention is to, I really want to make a lot more money, okay? So if you say, gosh, universe, I want to make a lot more money, what you're saying is implicitly, I'd like to make more money in the future. Rather than saying that or thinking that or setting an intention, you want to say, set an intention that is specific. And what I mean by that, is to visualize what it is that you're going to want to have in the future, what your desire is. And there's like three people that I want to talk about really quickly that use visualization, and one everybody knows about. His name is Arnold Schwarzenegger. He used visualization before he would participate in Mr. Universe. He won it 5 times. He won Mr. Olympian 4 times. He's been visualizing since before anyone had even heard of him, and he would look at his muscle, he would visualize the way that he'd want it to look, and I'm going to tell you from personal experience, this is the easiest intention to manifest. Your body, because your mind and your brain, it's all right there. It's real. It's very geographically well located. So your ability to change the way that you look is amazing, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is a fantastic example of this. He was beyond just his physical prowess. He went on and he visualized himself marrying an East Coast Kennedy. He did that. He visualized creating a successful movie career and then a political career. Everything that he visualized, he used the same techniques. If you talk to him, he will tell you, yeah, I would sit down and decide who I was looking for, and it would manifest. Another guy that he's from Chicago, where I'm from. He was the king of intention manifestation. He would use visualization techniques, and he would assert his visualizations using, like, power-packed words or poetic. I don't know if are you familiar with Muhammad Ali from way back?
Oh, absolutely.
Remember how he would do interviews with Howard Cosell?
Yep.
And now they're black and white. You can see them every once in a while, but they're hilarious because he's almost laughing at himself under his breath as he's saying the things. You know, he's the greatest fighter of them all. He not only believed it, he visualized himself punching out the opponent.
Well, and not only that, but I remember because he would tell Howard what round he was going to punch him out. So he was visualizing it to the point that he not only knew that he was going to do it, but he knew exactly when. And Peter, I just glanced over at something, and I need to visualize something myself. I want to visualize you back on this show, not only talking about this book, but talking about your new book. Now, I know that you have another one that has just come out called It's None of My Business What You Think of Me. So, Peter, I cannot believe that the time has gone by so fast, but I want to tell our listeners, okay, you can get either of these books, The Point of Power or It's None of My Business What You Think of Me, at books at Peter BAKSA.com. All right. So everybody out there, again, I'm reading The Point of Power right now. It is incredible. I recommend it to everybody. Peter, can you help me with my visualization? Can we have you back?
Absolutely. And let me just also say, please go to my Huffington Post, look up my name, Peter Baksa, B-A-K-S-A, comment on my article. I love to hear from my readers. And you can go to Amazon.com. You can go to Borders, Barnes & Noble as well to pick up the books, both by ebook or they'll mail you out a copy. You'll get one within 48 hours. So it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to seeing you again.
All right. Thanks, Peter. Bye now.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.